Just perhaps Calypso's exile on Ogygia had been worse than my present predicament. At least I had friends to share my suffering. I felt guilty that I hadn't voted to release her earlier from her island. But why would she forgive me if I apologize now? That was all Styx water under the gates of Erebos. There was no going back. Calypso put her hand on Abelard's head. He could have easily snapped off her arm, but he crouched and turned into the caress like a cat. Calypso knelt, removed another hairpin, and began working on the griffin's manacle. While she tinkered, I tried to keep Abelard's eyes on me. I sang as decently as I could, channeling my sorrow and sympathy into the verses, hoping Abelard would understand that I was a fellow soul in pain. Calypso popped the lock. With a clank, the iron cuff fell from Abelard's back leg. Calypso moved toward Heloise, a much trickier proposition, approaching an expecting mother. Heloise growled suspiciously, but did not attack. We continued to sing, our voices in perfect pitch now, melding together the way the best harmonies do, creating something greater than the sum of two individual voices. Calypso freed Heloise. She stepped back and stood shoulder to shoulder with me as we finished the last line of the song. As long as gods shall live, so long shall I love you. The griffins stared at us. They seemed more intrigued now than angry. Tots, Calypso advised. I shook half the packet into her palms. I didn't relish the idea of losing my arms. They were useful appendages. Nevertheless, I proffered a handful of golden tater tots to Abelard. He scuttled forward and sniffed. When he opened his beak, I reached inside and pressed the tots on his warm tongue. Like a true gentleman, he waited until I removed my hand before swallowing down the snack. He ruffled his neck feathers, then turned to squawk at Heloise. Yeah, good eating. Come on over. Calypso fed her tots to Heloise. The female griffin butted her head against the sorceress in a sign of obvious affection. For a moment, I felt relief. Elation. We had succeeded. Then, behind us, someone clapped. Standing at the threshold, bloody and battered, but still very much alive, was Laterces, all by himself. Well done, said the swordsman. You found a perfect place to die. 16. Son of Midas, you, sir, are a stupid head. Here, have an ostrich. In my 4,000 years of life, I had searched for many things. Beautiful women, handsome men, the best composite bows, the perfect seaside palace, and a 1958 Gibson Flying V. But I had never searched for a perfect place to die. Calypso? I said weakly. Yeah. If we die here, I'd just like to say you aren't as bad as I originally thought. Thanks, but we're not going to die. That would deprive me of killing you later. Laterces chuckled. Oh, you two, bantering like you have a future. It must be hard for former immortals to accept that death is real. Me? I've died. Let me tell you, it's no fun. I was tempted to sing to him the way I had with the griffins. Perhaps I could convince him I was a fellow sufferer. Something told me it wouldn't work. And alas, I was all out of tater tots. You're the son of King Midas, I said. You came back to the mortal world when the doors of death were open. I didn't know much about that incident, but there'd been some massive underworld jailbreak during the recent war with the Giants. Hades had ranted nonstop about Gia stealing all his dead people so they could work for her. Honestly, I couldn't blame the Earth Mother. Good cheap labor is terribly difficult to find. The swordsman curled his lip. We came through the doors of death, all right. Then my idiot father promptly got himself killed again, thanks to a run-in with Leo Valdez and his crew. I survived only because I was turned into a gold statue and covered with a rug. Calypso backed toward the griffins. That's quite a story. Doesn't matter, snarled the swordsman. The triumvirate offered me work. They recognize the work of Laterces, Reaper of Men. Impressive title, I managed. He raised his sword. I earned it, believe me. My friends call me Lit, but my enemies call me Death.
I'll call you Lit, I decided. Though you don't strike me as very lit. You know, your father and I used to be great friends. Once I even gave him ass's ears.
As soon as I said that, I realized it was perhaps not the best proof of my friendship. Lit gave me a cruel smile.
Yes, I grew up hearing about that music contest you made my dad judge. Gave him donkey ears because he declared your opponent the winner? Huh. My father hated you so much for that. I was almost tempted to like you. But I don't. He sliced through the air in a practice swipe. It'll be a pleasure to kill you.
Hold on, I shrieked. What about all that take 'em alive business?
Lit shrugged. I changed my mind. First, that roof collapsed on me. Then my bodyguards got swallowed by a stand of bamboo. I don't suppose you know anything about that. My pulse boomed like timpani in my ears.
No.
Right. He regarded Calypso.
I think I'll keep you alive long enough to kill you in front of Valdez's face. That'll be fun.
But this former god here, Lit shrugged. I'll just have to tell the Emperor he resisted arrest.
This was it. After 4 millennia of glory, I was going to die in a griffin enclosure in Indianapolis. I confess, I hadn't envisioned my death this way. I hadn't envisioned it at all. But if I had to go, I wanted a lot more explosions and blazing spotlights. A host of beautiful weeping gods and goddesses crying, "No, take us instead." And a lot less animal poop. Surely Zeus would intercede. He couldn't allow my punishment on Earth to include actual death. Or perhaps Artemis would slay Lit with an arrow of death. She could always tell Zeus it was a freak longbow malfunction. At the very least, I hoped the griffins would come to my aid, since I'd fed them and sung to them so sweetly. None of that happened. Abelard hissed at Laterces, but the griffin seemed reluctant to attack. Perhaps Laterces had used those sinister training implements on him and his mate. The swordsman rushed me with blinding speed. He swung his blade horizontally, right toward my neck. My last thought was how much the cosmos would miss me. The last thing I smelled was the scent of baked apples. Then, from somewhere above, a small humanoid form dropped between me and my attacker. With a clang and a burst of sparks, Laterces' blade stopped cold in the crook of a golden X. The crossed blades of Meg McCaffrey. I may have whimpered. I had never been so happy to see anyone in my life. And that includes Hyacinthus, the time he wore that amazing tuxedo on our date night. So you know I mean it.
Meg pushed with her blades and sent Laterces stumbling backward. Her dark pageboy hair was festooned with twigs and blades of grass. She wore her usual red high tops, her yellow leggings, and the green dress Sally Jackson had lent her the first day we met. I found this strangely heartwarming.
Laterces sneered at her, but he did not look particularly surprised.
I wondered if threatening this idiot god would smoke you out of hiding. You've signed your death warrant.
Meg uncrossed her blades. She retorted in her typical poetic fashion.
Nope.
Calypso glanced at me. She mouthed the question,
This is Meg?
This is Meg, I agreed, which encompassed a lot of explanation in a very short exchange. Laterces stepped sideways to block the exit. He was limping slightly, probably from his incident with the canopy.
You dropped that ivy-covered roof on me, he said. You made the bamboo attack my men.
Yep,
Meg said.
You're stupid.
Lit hissed in annoyance. I understood this effect Meg had on people. Still, my heart was humming a perfect middle sea of happiness. My young protector had returned. Yes, yes, she was technically my master, but let's not mince words. She had seen the error of her ways. She had rebelled against Nero. Now she would stand by my side and help me retain my godhood. Cosmic order had been restored.
Then she glanced back at me. Instead of beaming with joy or hugging me or apologizing, she said,
Get out of here.
The command jarred me to the bones. I stepped back as if pushed. I was filled with the sudden desire to flee.
When we'd parted, Meg had told me I was released from her service.
Now it was clear that our master-servant relationship could not be so easily broken. Zeus meant me to follow her commands until I died or became a god again. I wasn't sure he cared which.
But Meg, I pleaded, you just arrived. We must
go, she said. Take the griffins and get out. I'll hold off, stupid head.
Lit laughed. I've heard you're a decent sword fighter, McCaffrey, but no child can match the Reaper of Men.
He spun his blade like Pete Townsend windmilling his guitar. A move I taught Pete, though I never approved of the way he smashed his guitar into the speakers afterward. Such a waste.
Demeter is my mother, too, Lit said. Her children make the best swordsmen. We understand the need to reap.
It's just the flip side of sowing, isn't it, little sister?
Let's see what you know about reaping lives.
He lunged. Meg countered his strike and drove him back. They circled each other, three swords whirling in a deadly dance, like blender blades making an air smoothie. Meanwhile, I was compelled to walk toward the griffins as Meg had ordered. I tried to do it slowly. I was reluctant to take my eyes off the battle, as if merely by watching Meg, I was somehow lending her strength. Once, when I was a god, that would have been possible. But now, what good could a spectating Lester do?
Calypso stood in front of Heloise, protecting the mother-to-be with her body. I made it to Calypso's side.
You're lighter than I said. You ride Heloise. Be careful of her gut. I'll take Abelard.
What about Meg?
Calypso demanded.
We can't leave her.
Just yesterday, I had toyed with the idea of leaving Calypso behind to the Blemmyi when she was wounded.
I'd like to say that wasn't a serious thought, but it had been, however briefly.
Now Calypso refused to leave Meg, whom she barely knew. It was almost enough to make me question whether I was a good person. I stressed the word almost.
You're right, of course.
I glanced across the arena. In the opposite enclosure, the combat ostriches were peering through their plexiglass, following the sword fight with professional interest.
We need to move this party.
I turned to address Abelard. I apologize in advance. I'm terrible at riding griffins. The griffin squawked as if to say, "Do what you gotta do, man." He allowed me to climb aboard and tuck my legs behind the base of his wings. Calypso followed my example, carefully straddling Heloise's spine. The griffins, impatient to be gone, bounded past the sword fight and into the arena. Laterces lunged as I passed him. He would have taken off my right arm, but Meg blocked his strike with one sword and swept at Lit's feet with the other, forcing him back again.
"Take those griffins and you'll only suffer more," Lit warned. "All the Emperor's prisoners will die slowly, especially the little girl."
My hands shook with anger, but I managed to knock an arrow in my bow.
"Meg!" I yelled. "Come on!"
"I told you to leave," she complained.
"You're a bad slave."
On that, at least, we agreed. Laterces advanced on Meg again, slashing and stabbing. I was no expert on swordplay, but as good as Meg was, I feared she was outmatched. Laterces had more strength, speed, and reach. He was twice Meg's size. He'd been practicing for countless more years. If Laterces hadn't recently been injured from having a roof dropped on him, I suspected this fight might have been over already.
"Go on, Apollo," Lit taunted. "Fire that arrow at me."
I had seen how fast he could move. No doubt he would pull an Athena and slash my arrow out of the sky before it hit him. So unfair. But shooting at him had never been my plan. I leaned toward Abelard's head and said,
"Fly."
The griffin launched himself into the air as if my added weight was nothing. He circled around the stadium tiers, screeching for his mate to join him. Heloise had more trouble. She lumbered halfway across the arena floor, flapping her wings and growling with discomfort before getting airborne. With Calypso clinging to her neck for dear life, Heloise began flying in a tight circle behind Abelard. There was nowhere for us to go, not with the net above us. But I had more immediate problems. Meg stumbled, barely managing to parry Lit's strike. His next cut sliced across Meg's thigh, ripping her legging. The yellow fabric quickly turned orange from the flow of blood. Lit grinned.
"You're good, little sister. But you're getting tired. You don't have the stamina to face me."
"Abelard," I murmured. "We need to get the girl. Dive!"
The griffin complied with a bit too much enthusiasm. I almost missed my shot. I let my arrow fly not at Laterces, but at the control box next to the Emperor's seat, aiming for a lever I had noted earlier. The one that read, "Omnia."
"Everything."
Whang!
The arrow hit its mark. With a series of satisfying ka-chunks, the plexiglass shields dropped from all the enclosures. Laterces was too busy to realize what had happened. Being dive-bombed by a griffin tends to focus one's attention. Lit backed away, allowing Abelard to snatch Meg McCaffrey in his paws and soar upward again. Lit gaped at us in dismay.
"Good trick, Apollo. But where will you go? You're—"
That's when he was run over by a herd of armored ostriches. The swordsman disappeared under a tidal wave of feathers, razor wire, and warty pink legs. As Laterces squawked like a goose, curling up to protect himself, the winged serpents, fire-breathing horses, and Ethiopian bull came out to join the fun.
Meg!
I stretched out my arm. While precariously gripped in Abelard's paws, she willed her swords to shrink back into golden rings. She caught my hand. Somehow, I managed to pull her onto Abelard and seat her in front of me. The flying serpents fluttered toward Heloise, who squawked defiantly and beat her mighty wings, climbing toward the netting. Abelard followed. My heart hammered against my ribs. Surely we couldn't bust through the net. It would be designed to withstand brute force, beaks, and claws. I imagined us hitting the barrier and getting bounced back to the arena floor, as if on a reverse trampoline. It seemed an undignified way to die. A moment before we would have slammed into the net, Calypso thrust up her arms. She howled in rage, and the net blasted upward, ripped from its moorings, and was tossed into the sky like a giant tissue in a gale-force wind. Free and unhurt, we soared out of the arena. I stared at Calypso in amazement. She seemed as surprised as I was. Then she slumped and listed sideways. Heloise compensated, shifting her pitch to keep the sorceress on board. Calypso, looking only semi-conscious, clung weakly to the griffin's fur. As our two noble steeds rose into the sky, I glanced down at the arena. The monsters were engaged in a vicious free-for-all, but I saw no sign of Laterces. Meg twisted to face me, her mouth set in a ferocious scowl. You were supposed to go. Then she wrapped her arms around me and hugged me so tightly I felt new fracture lines developing on my ribs. Meg sobbed, her face buried in my shirt, her whole body shaking. As for me, I did not weep. No, I'm sure my eyes were quite dry. I did not bawl like a baby in the slightest. The most I will admit is this. With her tears moistening my shirt, her cat-eye glasses digging uncomfortably into my chest, her smell of baked apples, dirt, and sweat overwhelming my nostrils, I was quite content to be annoyed, once again, by Meg McCaffrey. 17. To the way station. Meg McCaffrey eats my bread. I cry godly tears. Heloise and Abelard knew where to go. They circled the waystation roof until a section of shingles slid open, allowing the griffins to spiral into the great hall. They landed on the ledge, side by side in their nest, as Josephine and Leo scrambled up the ladders to join us. Josephine threw her arms first around Heloise's neck, then Abelard's. Oh, my sweethearts! You're alive! The griffins cooed and leaned against her in greeting. Josephine beamed at Meg McCaffrey. Welcome. I'm Joe. Meg blinked, apparently not used to such an enthusiastic greeting. Calypso half climbed, half tumbled from Heloise's back. She would have toppled off the ledge if Leo hadn't caught her. Whoa, mamacita, he said. You okay? She blinked sleepily.
I'm fine. Don't fuss. And don't call me.
She crumpled against Leo, who struggled to keep her upright. He glared at me. What did you do to her?
Not a thing, I protested. I believe Calypso managed some magic.
I explained what had happened at the zoo, our encounter with Laterces, our escape,
and how the arena's netting had suddenly shot into the sky like a squid from a water cannon. One of Poseidon's less successful prototype weapons. Meg added unhelpfully,
"It was crazy."
"The Tearseas," Leo muttered. "I hate that guy. Is Cal going to be okay?"
Josephine checked Calypso's pulse, then pressed a hand against her forehead. Slumped against Leo's shoulder, the sorceress snored like a razorback sow.
"She's blown a circuit," Josephine announced.
"Blown a circuit?" Leo yelped. "I don't like blown circuits."
"Just an expression, bud," said Josephine. "She's overextended herself magically. We should get her to Emmy in the infirmary. Here."
Josephine scooped up Calypso. Ignoring the ladder, she jumped off the ledge and landed easily on the floor 20 feet below. Leo scowled.
"I could have done that."
He turned to Meg. No doubt he recognized her from my many tales of woe. After all, young girls in stoplight-colored clothing and rhinestone cat-eye glasses were not common.
"You're Meg McCaffrey," he decided.
"Yep."
"Cool. I'm Leo. And, he pointed at me. "I understand you can, like, control this guy?"
I cleared my throat.
"We merely cooperate. I'm not controlled by anyone, right, Meg?"
"Slap yourself," Meg commanded.
I slapped myself.
Leo grinned.
"Oh, this is too good. I'm going to check on Calypso, but later we need to talk."
He slid down the ladder railings, leaving me with a deep sense of foreboding. The griffins settled into their nest, clucking contentedly to each other. I was no griffin midwife, but Heloise, thank the gods, seemed no worse for wear after her flight. I faced Meg. My cheek stung where I'd slapped myself. My pride had been trampled like Latirces under a herd of combat ostriches. Nevertheless, I felt remarkably happy to see my young friend.
"You rescued me."
Then I added two words that never come easily to a god.
"Thank you."
Meg gripped her elbows. On her middle fingers, her gold rings glinted with the crescent symbol of her mother, Demeter. I had bandaged her cut thigh as best I could while we were in flight, but she still looked shaky on her feet. I thought she might cry again. But when she met my eyes, she wore her usual willful expression, as if she were about to call me poop face or order me to play princess versus dragon with her.
I never got to be the princess.
"I didn't do it for you," she said. I tried to process that meaningless phrase.
"Then why
that guy?"
She waved her fingers over her face, indicating Latirces' scars.
"He was bad."
"Well, I can't argue with that."
"And the ones who drove me from New York?"
She made her icky expression.
"Marcus, Vortigern, they said things, what they would do in Indianapolis."
She shook her head.
"Bad things."
I wondered if Meg knew that Marcus and Vortigern had been beheaded for letting her escape. I decided not to mention it. If Meg was really curious, she could check their Facebook status updates. Next to us, the griffins snuggled in for a well-deserved rest. They tucked their heads under their wings and purred, which would have been cute if they didn't sound like chainsaws.
"Meg,"
I faltered. I felt as if a plexiglass wall divided us, though I wasn't sure whom it was protecting from whom. I wanted to say so many things to her, but I wasn't sure how. I summoned my courage. I am going to try. Meg studied me warily.
Try what?
To tell you how I feel. To clear the air. Stop me if I say something wrong, but I think it's obvious we still need each other. She didn't respond. I don't blame you for anything, I continued. The fact that you left me alone in the Grove of Dodona, that you lied about your stepfather.
Stop!
I waited for her faithful servant Peaches, the carpost, to fall from the heavens and tear my scalp off. It didn't happen. What I mean, I tried again, is that I am sorry for everything you have been through. None of it was your fault. You should not blame yourself. That fiend Nero played with your emotions, twisted your thoughts.
Stop!
Perhaps I could put my feelings into a song.
Stop!
Or I could tell you a story about a similar thing that once happened to me.
Stop!
A short riff on my ukulele?
Stop!
This time, though, I detected the faintest hint of a smile tugging at the corner of Meg's mouth. Can we at least agree to work together? I asked. The Emperor in this city is searching for us both. If we don't stop him, he will do many more bad things. Meg raised her left shoulder to her ear.
Okay.
A gentle crackling sound came from the griffin's nest. Green shoots were sprouting from the dry hay, perhaps a sign of Meg's improving mood. I remembered Cleander's words in my nightmare. You should have realized how powerful she is becoming. Meg had somehow tracked me to the zoo. She'd caused ivy to grow until it collapsed a roof. She'd made bamboo plants swallow a squad of Germani. She'd even teleported away from her escorts in Dayton using a clump of dandelions. Few children of Demeter had ever had such abilities. Still, I was under no illusions that Meg and I could skip away from here arm in arm, our problems forgotten. Sooner or later, she would have to confront Nero again. Her loyalties would be tested. Her fears played upon. I could not free her of her past, even with the best song or ukulele riff. Meg rubbed her nose.
Is there any food?
I hadn't realized how tense I'd been until I relaxed. If Meg was thinking of food, we were back on the path to normalcy.
There is food.
I lowered my voice.
Mind you, it's not as good as Sally Jackson's 7-layer dip, but Emmy's fresh-baked bread and homemade cheese are quite acceptable.
Behind me, a voice said dryly, "So glad you approve." I turned. At the top of the ladder, Emmy was glaring griffin claws at me. Lady Britomartis is downstairs. She wants to talk to you. The goddess did not say thank you. She did not shower me with praise, offer me a kiss, or even give me a free magic net. Britomartis simply waved to seats across the dinner table and said, "Sit." She was dressed in a gauzy black dress over a fishnet bodysuit, a look that reminded me of Stevie Nicks circa 1981. We did a fabulous duet on Stop Dragging My Heart Around. I got 0 credit on the album, though. She propped her leather boots on the dining table as if she owned the place, which I guess she did, and twirled her auburn braid between her fingers. I checked my seat, then Meg's for any spring-activated explosive devices, but without Leo's expert eye, I couldn't be sure. My only hope, Britomartis looked distracted, perhaps too distracted for her usual fun and games. I sat. Happily, my glutose did not explode. A simple meal had been laid out. More salad, bread, and cheese. I hadn't realized it was lunchtime, but when I saw the food, my stomach growled. I reached for the loaf of bread. Emmy pulled it away and gave it to Meg. Emmy smiled sweetly. Apollo, I wouldn't want you to eat anything that's only acceptable. There's plenty of salad, though. I stared miserably at the bowl of lettuce and cucumbers. Meg grabbed the entire bread loaf and ripped off a chunk, chewing it with gusto. Well, I say chewing. Meg stuffed so much into her mouth it was difficult to know if her teeth ever connected. Britta Martis laced her fingers in front of her. Even that simple gesture looked like an elaborate snare. Emmy, she said, how is the sorceress? Resting comfortably, my lady, said Emmy. Leo and Josephine are looking in on her. Ah, here they are now. Josephine and Leo strode toward the dining table. Leo's arms spread like the Rio de Janeiro Christ statue. You can all relax, he announced. Calypso is okay. The net goddess grunted as if disappointed. A thought struck me. I frowned at Britta Martis. The net over the arena. Nets are your department. You helped blast it away, didn't you? Calypso couldn't have done that magic by herself. Britta Martis smirked. I may have jump-started her power a bit. She'll be more useful to me if she can master her old abilities. Leo dropped his arms. But you could have killed her. The goddess shrugged. Probably not, but it's hard to say. Tricky stuff, magic. You never know when or how it's going to come out. She spoke with distaste, as if magic were some poorly controlled bodily function. Leo's ears began to smoke. He stepped toward the goddess. Josephine grabbed his arm. Let it go, bud. Between Emmy and me, we can take care of your girl. Leo wagged a finger at Britta Martis. You're lucky these ladies are such bosses. Joe here? She told me that with enough time and training, she could probably help Calypso get her magic back all the way. Josephine shifted, her wrenches clinking in the pockets of her coveralls. Leo. Did you know she was a gangster? He grinned at me. Joe knew Al Capone. She had the secret identity and... Leo! He flinched. Which isn't my place to talk about. Oh, look, food. He took a seat and began cutting the cheese. Britta Martis pressed her hands against the table. But enough about the sorceress. Apollo, I must admit you did moderately well retrieving my griffins. Moderately well. I bit back a few nasty comments. I wondered if demigods ever felt the need to restrain themselves when facing ungrateful gods like this. No, surely not. I was special and different, and I deserved better treatment. So glad you approve, I muttered. Britta Martis's smile was thin and cruel. I imagined nets wrapping around my feet, constricting the flow of blood in my ankles. As promised, I will now reward you. I'll give you information that will lead you directly to the palace of the Emperor, where you'll either make us proud or be executed in some horrible but creative fashion. 18. My dear Commodus, Commode is named after you. Hail Toilet Caesar. Why did people keep ruining my meals? First, they served me food, then they explained how I was likely to die in the near future. I longed to be back on Mount Olympus,
where I could worry about more interesting things, like hot trends in technopop, bumper car poetry slams, and laying waste to naughty communities with my arrows of vengeance. One thing I'd learned from being mortal, contemplating death is much more fun when you're contemplating someone else's. Before Britomartis would give us our reward, she insisted on a briefing from Josephine and Emmy, who had spent all day, with Leo's help, preparing the way station for a siege. "This guy's good." Josephine punched Leo's arm affectionately. "The things he knows about Archimedes spheres, really impressive."
"Spheres?" Meg asked.
"Yeah," Leo said. "They're these round things."
"Shut up."
Meg went back to inhaling carbohydrates.
"We reset all the crossbow turrets," Joe continued. "Primed the catapults, closed all exits, and put Waystation on 24-hour surveillance mode. If anyone tries to get in, we'll know."
"They will try," Britomartis promised. "It's only a matter of time."
I raised my hand. "And, Vestas?" I hoped the wistfulness in my voice was not too obvious. I didn't want the others to think I was ready to fly off on our bronze dragon and leave the way station to sort out its own problems. Though I was ready to do exactly that. Emmy shook her head. "I scouted the state house grounds late last night, and again this morning. Nothing. The Blemii must have taken your bronze suitcase to the palace." Leo clicked his tongue. "I bet Lictyrsis has it. When I get my hands on that crust-sucking cornhusker." "Which brings us to the point," I said. How do we find the palace?" Britomartis slid her feet off the table. She sat forward. "The main gates to the Emperor's palace are under the Soldiers and Sailors Monument." Josephine grunted.
"Should have known."
"Why?" I asked. "What is that?" Josephine rolled her eyes. "A huge decorated column thing in the middle of a plaza, a few blocks north of here. Just the kind of ostentatious, over-the-top edifice you'd expect the Emperor to have for his entrance."
"It's the biggest monument in the city," Emmy added.
I tried to contain my bitterness. Soldiers and sailors were all very well, but if your city's biggest monument is not to Apollo, I'm sorry, you're doing something wrong. "I suppose the palace is heavily guarded?" Britomartis laughed.
"Even by my standards, the monument is a death trap. Machine gun turrets, lasers, monsters. Attempting the front door without an invitation would have dire consequences."
Meg swallowed a chunk of bread, somehow managing not to choke.
"The Emperor would let us in."
"Well, true," Britomartis agreed.
"He'd love for you and Apollo to knock on his front door and give yourselves up. But I only mention the main entrance because you should avoid it at all costs. If you want to get inside the palace without being apprehended and tortured to death, there's another possibility."
Leo bit a cheese slice into the shape of a smile. He held it up to his mouth.
"Leo is happy when he's not being tortured to death."
Meg snorted. A gob of bread shot out of her right nostril, but she didn't have the decency to look embarrassed. I could tell Leo and Meg were not going to be healthy influences on each other.
"Then, to get inside," said the goddess, "you must use the waterworks."
"The plumbing system," I guessed. In my vision of the Emperor's throne room, I saw open trenches of flowing water. "You know how to access them?" Britomartis winked at me.
"You're not still afraid of water, I hope."
"I have never been afraid of water."
My voice came out shriller than I intended. Hmm, Britomartis mused.
Then why did the Greeks always pray to you for a safe landing whenever they were in dangerous waters?
Because my mother was stuck in a boat when she was trying to give birth to me and Artemis. I can appreciate wanting to be on solid ground.
And those rumors you can't swim?
I remember at Triton's pool party.
I can totally swim.
Just because I didn't want to play Marco Polo with you in the deep end with contact mines.
Hey, Gotti people,
Meg interrupted.
The waterworks.
Right.
For once, I was relieved at Meg's lack of patience.
Britomartis, how do we access the throne room?
Britomartis narrowed her eyes at Meg.
Gotti people.
She seemed to be pondering how McCaffrey would look wrapped in a lead-weighted hook net and dropped into the Mariana Trench.
Well, Miss McCaffrey, to access the Emperor's water system, you'll need to search the city's canal walk.
What's that?
Meg asked.
Emmy patted her hand. I can show you. It's an old canal that runs through downtown. They refurbished the area, built a bunch of new apartments and restaurants and whatnot.
Leo popped his cheese smile into his mouth.
I love whatnot.
Britomartis smiled.
That's fortunate, Leo Valdez, because your skills will be required to find the entrance, disarm the traps, and whatnot.
Hold up. Find the entrance? I thought you'd tell us where it was.
I just did, said the goddess. Somewhere along the canal. Look for a grate.
You'll know it when you see it.
Uh-huh. And it'll be booby-trapped.
Of course.
But not nearly as much as the fortress's main entrance.
And Apollo will have to overcome his fear of water.
I don't have a fear.
Shut up,
Meg told me, causing my vocal cords to solidify like cold cement. She pointed a carrot at Leo.
If we find the grate, can you get us in?
Leo's expression made him look as serious and dangerous as it was possible for a small elfin demigod to look in a little girl's coveralls. A clean pair, mind you, which he'd intentionally found and put on.
I'm a son of Hephaestus, chica. I can problem solve. This guy Latirces tried to kill me and my friends once before. Now he's threatened Calypso? Yeah, I'll get us inside that palace. Then I'm going to find Lit and...
Light him up? I suggested. Surprised, but pleased to find I could speak again so soon after being told to shut up.
So he's literally lit? Leo frowned.
I wasn't going to say that. Seemed too corny.
When I say it,
I assured him,
it's poetry.
Well, Britomartis rose, fish hooks and weights clinking in her dress.
When Apollo starts talking poetry, that's my cue to leave.
I wish I'd known that sooner, I said. She blew me an air kiss.
Your friend Calypso should remain here. Josephine, see if you can help her regain control over her magic. She'll need it for the coming battle.
Josephine drummed her fingers on the table.
Been a long time since I've trained anyone in the ways of Hecate, but I'll do my best.
Emmy, the goddess continued, you watch after my griffins. Heloise could lay her egg at any moment.
Emmy's scalp turned crimson along her silver hairline.
What about Georgina?
You've given us away into the Emperor's palace. Now you expect us to stay here rather than go free our girl? Britomartis raised a hand in caution, as if to say, you're very close to the Burmese tiger pit, my dear.
Trust Meg, Leo, and Apollo.
This is their task. To find and free the captives. To retrieve the throne of Namazini.
And get Festus, Leo added.
And especially Georgina, Joe added.
We can pick up some groceries too, Leo offered.
I noticed you're low on hot sauce.
Britomartis chose not to destroy him, though from her expression I could tell she came close. Tomorrow at first light, search for the entrance.
Why not earlier?
Meg asked.
The goddess smirked.
You're fearless. I respect that. But you must be rested and prepared to meet the Emperor's forces. You need that leg wound tended to.
I also suspect it's been many nights since you've had a proper sleep.
Besides, the incident at the zoo has the Emperor's security on high alert. Best to let the dust settle. If he catches you, Meg McCaffrey.
I know.
She did not sound afraid. Her tone was that of a child who had been reminded for the fifth time to clean her room.
The only sign of Meg's anxiety in her hand. Her last piece of bread had begun to sprout green tendrils of wheat.
In the meantime, Britomartis said, I will try to locate the hunters of Artemis. They were in the area on a quest not long ago. Perhaps they are still close enough to come help defend this place.
A hysterical giggle escaped my mouth. The idea of 20 or 30 other competent archers at my side, even if they were sworn maidens with no sense of humor, made me feel much safer.
That would be good.
But if not, said the goddess, you must be prepared to fight on your own.
That would be typical, I sighed.
And remember, the Emperor's naming ceremony is the day after tomorrow.
Thank you so much, I said. I needed the reminder.
Oh, don't look so glum, Apollo.
Britomartis gave me one last flirtatious, irritatingly cute smile. If you come out alive, we'll catch a movie together. I promise.
Her gauzy black dress swirled around her in a tornado of netting. Then she was gone.
Meg turned to me.
Naming ceremony?
Yes. I stared at her furry green piece of bread, wondering if it was still edible. The Emperor is quite the megalomaniac. As he did in ancient times, he plans to rename this capital city after himself. Probably he'll rename the state, the inhabitants, and the months of the year, too.
Meg snorted.
Commode City?
Leo gave her a tentative smile.
What now?
His name is...
Don't, Meg, Josephine warned.
Commodus,
Meg continued, then frowned.
Why am I not supposed to say his name?
He pays attention to such things, I explained. There's no point in letting him know we are talking about. Meg took a deep breath and yelled.
Commodus, Commodus, Commodus! Commode City! Commodiana! Commode Day! Month of Commodes! Commode Man!
The Great Hall shook as if the waystation itself had taken offense. Emmy blanched. Up in her roost, the griffins clucked nervously. Josephine grumbled. You shouldn't have done that, hon.
Leo just shrugged. Well, if Commode Man wasn't watching this channel before, I think he is now.
That's dumb, Meg said. Don't treat him like he's so powerful. My stepfather...
Her voice caught.
He said Commodus is the weakest of the three. We can take him.
Her words struck me in the gut like one of Artemis's blunted arrows. And I can assure you, those hurt. We can take him. The name of my old friend shouted over and over. I staggered to my feet, gagging, my tongue trying to dislodge itself from my throat.
Whoa, Apollo!
Leo rushed to my side.
You okay?
Another dry retch. I staggered toward the nearest bathroom as a vision engulfed me, bringing me back to the day I committed murder. 19. Call me Narcissus. Today I'll be your trainer. I'll also kill you. I know what you are thinking. But Apollo, you are divine. You cannot commit murder. Any death you cause is the will of the gods and entirely beyond reproach. It would be an honor if you killed me. I like the way you think, good reader. It's true, I had laid waste to whole cities with my fiery arrows. I had inflicted countless plagues upon humanity. Once, Artemis and I slew a family of 12 because their mama said something bad about our mama. The nerve. None of that did I consider murder. But as I stumbled to the bathroom, ready to vomit into a toilet I had cleaned just yesterday, dreadful memories consumed me. I found myself in ancient Rome on a cold winter day when I truly did commit a terrible act. A bitter wind swept through the palace halls. Fires guttered in the braziers. The faces of the Praetorian guards betrayed no sign of discomfort. But as I passed them at every doorway, I could hear their armor clattering as they shivered. No one challenged me as I strode toward the Emperor's private chambers. Why would they? I was Narcissus, Caesar's trusted personal trainer. Tonight I wore my mortal disguise poorly. My stomach churned. Sweat trickled down the back of my neck. The shock of that day's games still overwhelmed my senses. The stench of carcasses on the arena floor. The bloodthirsty crowd shouting, "Commodus! Commodus!" The Emperor, in resplendent golden armor and purple robes, tossing the severed heads of ostriches into the seats of the senators, gesturing toward the old men with the point of his sword. "You're next." The Praetorian prefect Laetus had pulled me aside only an hour ago. "We failed at lunch. This is our last chance. We can take him, but only with your help." Marcia, Commodus's mistress, had wept as she tugged at my arm. "You will kill us all. You will destroy Rome. You know what must be done." They were right. I'd seen the list of names. The enemies, real or imagined, whom Commodus intended to execute tomorrow. Marcia and Laetus were at the top of the list, followed by senators, noblemen, and several priests in the temple of Apollo Socianus. That sort of thing I couldn't overlook. Commodus would chop them down as carelessly as he did his ostriches and lions. I pushed open the bronze doors of the Emperor's chambers. From the shadows, Commodus bellowed,
"Go away!"
A bronze pitcher sailed past my head, slamming into the wall with such force it cracked the mosaic tiles. "Hello to you too," I said. "I never did like that fresco." The Emperor blinked, trying to focus.
"Ah, it's you, Narcissus. Come in then. Hurry, bar the doors."
I did as he asked. Commodus knelt on the floor, clinging to the side of a sofa for support. In the opulence of the bedchamber, with its silk curtains, gilded furniture, and colorfully frescoed walls, the Emperor looked out of place. Like a beggar pulled from some suburra alley. His eyes were wild, his beard glistened with spittle. Vomit and blood spattered his plain white tunic. which wasn't surprising considering his mistress and prefect had poisoned his wine at lunch. But if you could look past that, Commodus hadn't changed much since he was 18. Lounging in his campaign tent in the Danubian forest. He was 31 now, but the years had barely touched him. To the horror of Rome's fashionistas, he had grown his hair out long and had a shaggy beard to resemble his idol, Hercules. Otherwise, he was the picture of manly Roman perfection. One might almost have thought he was an immortal god, as he so often claimed to be.
"They tried to kill me," he snarled. "I know it was them. I won't die. I'll show them all."
My heart ached to see him this way. Only yesterday I'd been so hopeful. We'd practiced fighting techniques all afternoon. Strong and confident, he'd wrestled me to the ground and would have broken my neck if I'd been a regular mortal. After he let me up, we'd spent the rest of the day laughing and talking as we used to in the old days. Not that he knew my true identity, but still, disguised as Narcissus, I was sure I could restore the Emperor's good humor. Eventually rekindle the embers of the glorious young man I'd once known. And yet this morning, he'd woken up more bloodthirsty and manic than ever. I approached cautiously, as if he were a wounded animal. "You won't die from the poison. You're much too strong for that."
"Exactly."
He pulled himself up on the couch, his knuckles white with effort.
"I'll feel better tomorrow, as soon as I behead those traitors."
"Perhaps it would be better to rest for a few days," I suggested. "Take some time to recuperate and reflect."
"Reflect?" He winced from the pain. "I don't need to reflect, Narcissus. I will kill them and hire new advisors. You, perhaps. You want the job?"
I did not know whether to laugh or cry. While Commodus concentrated on his beloved games, he turned the powers of state over to prefects and cronies, all of whom tended to have a very short life expectancy. "I am just a personal trainer," I said.
"Who cares? I will make you a nobleman. You will rule Commodiana."
I flinched at the name. Outside the palace, no one accepted the emperor's rechristening of Rome. The citizens refused to call themselves Commodians. The legions were furious that they were now known as Commodiane. Commodus's crazy proclamations had been the final straw for his long-suffering advisors. "Please, Caesar," I implored him. "A rest from the executions and the games. Time to heal. Time to consider the consequences." He bared his teeth, his lips specked with blood.
"Don't you start too. You sound like my father. I'm done thinking about consequences."
My spirits collapsed. I knew what would happen in the coming days. Commodus would survive the poisoning. He would order a ruthless purge of his enemies. The city would be decorated with heads on pikes. Crucifixions would line the Via Appia. My priests would die. Half the Senate would perish. Rome itself, the bastion of the Olympian gods, would be shaken to its core. And Commodus would still be assassinated. Just a few weeks or months later, in some other fashion. I inclined my head in submission. "Of course, Caesar. May I draw you a bath?" Commodus grunted assent.
"I should get out of these filthy clothes."
As I often did for him after our workout sessions,
I filled his great marble bath with steaming rose-scented water. I helped him out of his soiled tunic and eased him into the tub. For a moment, he relaxed and closed his eyes. I recalled how he looked sleeping beside me when we were teens. I remembered his easy laugh as we raced through the woods, and the way his face scrunched up adorably when I bounced grapes off his nose. I sponged away the spittle and blood from his beard. I gently washed his face. Then I closed my hands around his neck. I'm sorry. I pushed his head under water and began to squeeze. Commodus was strong. Even in his weakened state, he thrashed and fought. I had to channel my godly might to keep him submerged, and in doing so, I must have revealed my true nature to him. He went still, his blue eyes wide with surprise and betrayal. He could not speak, but he mouthed the words, "You blessed me." The accusation forced a sob from my throat. The day his father died, I had promised Commodus, "You will always have my blessings." Now I was ending his reign. I was interfering in mortal affairs. Not just to save lives or to save Rome, but because I could not stand to see my beautiful Commodus die by anyone else's hands. His last breath bubbled through the whiskers of his beard. I hunched over him, crying, my hands around his throat, until the bathwater cooled. Britomartis was wrong. I didn't fear water. I simply couldn't look at the surface of any pool without imagining Commodus's face, stung with betrayal, staring up at me. The vision faded. My stomach heaved. I found myself hunched over a different water basin, a toilet in the way station. I'm not sure how long I knelt there, shivering, retching, wishing I could get rid of my hideous mortal frame as easily as I lost my stomach contents. Finally, I became aware of an orange reflection in the toilet water. Agamethus stood behind me, holding his magic eight ball. I whimpered in protest. "Must you sneak up on me while I'm vomiting?" The headless ghost proffered his magic sphere. "Some toilet paper would be more helpful," I said. Agamethus reached for the roll, but his ethereal fingers went right through the tissue. Odd that he could hold a magic eight ball and not a roll of toilet paper. Perhaps our hosts had not sprung for the extra-soft, two-ply, ghost-friendly Charmin. I took the ball. Without much conviction, I asked, "What do you want, Agamethus?" The answer floated up through the dark liquid. "We cannot remain." I groaned. Not another warning of doom.